is an interview for the Brickmakers Oral History Project at Museum LA. The date is December 17th, 2008, and I'm at Museum LA with Victor Vital Gagnon, and this is Andrea Lungier. Could you start just by saying your full name to make sure I pronounced it correctly?
Vital Gagnon.
And where and when were you born?
1937 in Lewiston.
Did you grow up in Lewiston?
35, beg your pardon.
1935?
Yeah.
And did you grow up here?
Yes.
What part of Lewiston?
Lincoln Street, Cross Street, Hines Alley, and back again after bouncing around back to Cross Street.
Yeah.
And then we bought the farm in Auburn, where Pioneer Plastic is now. And I lived there till I was married, moved out.
And what were your parents' names?
Vital Gagnon and Marie.
And how many children did they have?
Seven.
So there were seven of you. Where did you fall within the children?
I'm the oldest one.
And what did your parents do for a living?
My father worked in Bates. First, he worked in Androscoggin Mill for 17 years, and the mill closed down all of a sudden, and he was out of work. Then again to Bates Mill, where my mother had started after she got done with shoe shops for a while. So they both worked at Bates Mill for a number of years, I'm not sure what years.
Right. And then she must have been in the home some raising children. Or did she work all the way through?
No, it was off and on.
It's,
because in between the youngest and there was a 15-year lapse there, so she had a pretty good working period. And then when the last one was born, of course, that kind of knocked things off kilter there. And so she took a few years off again, and after that, I think she went back, I'm not sure, I think she went back to fancy stitching after that.
She was
a fancy stitcher in Brunswick for a long time, besides working in the mills, you know, a few years in the mills.
Right. Was that piecework?
Oh, yeah. All your shoe shop work is piecework, or 95% is piecework.
Yeah. And so then, your father bought a farm?
Yes.
To get out of the mill, or did he do both for a while?
Well, we used to live on the farm in the summer, moved to Lewiston in the winter because we had a long road, a private road to get to our farm. And it was, the snowfalls were just too big. We didn't have the right equipment to plow, couldn't afford it. I had a small Model A Ford tractor, and that's what we plowed with. The snow, plowed the snow. I mean, we had an old, I don't know where the plow came from, but the plow weighed more than the tractor did. it was wicked. It was wicked. The driveway was about, I'd say, half a mile long, a private road. So, and in the spring, we had mud. That was a month of the mud season that we couldn't get the car in. Had to leave the car at the main road on Poland Road. And that made for quite a walk, you know. And then I get a little bit organized and we stayed all winter. We stayed year round after a while. I can't remember what years it was, but I was roughly probably eight years old at that time. And we moved there for good.
Now, how did you get into brick making, and how old were you? Probably early 20s?
I was, I think I was 22, I think. And I had a couple of friends that worked there, and the money wasn't bad, and I thought it might be something I'd like. And it was. I liked it. I enjoyed it.
Talk to me about what it was like to work in the brickyard.
Well, first of all, It was very cold in the morning because we had to strip down to our bathing suit because for the simple reason that we're working in water all the time and we're always wet. And whatever clothes we tried to wear, it just slowed us down and it would, you know, we couldn't perform. So a bathing suit was the most, you know, it was just a cold job. It was wet and cold. No matter if we wore what they had, some guys tried rubber pants and rain jackets and rain suits and all that, but you just can't maneuver it because this is all speed. Another thing, it's piecework. So you can't go there and waste time. You've got to get it done. And that's the way it was done for 100 years. And water struck brick, it's more or less, you know, you've got to be in there. And we tried all kinds of gloves, and if you had, you might have one piece that stays dry, but the rest was wet. And as far as the boots concerned, if you got wet from the belt up, it would leak down and would eventually end up in the boots anyways. So clothing was a slowdown. It was just a drawback. So when you get there in the morning, and I can't rightly remember what month we started in, but when we get there in the morning, I've seen a few mornings that there was a layer of ice on little puddles on the ground. And I'm telling you, you want to get started making brick fast. Of course, in 10 minutes, we'd be nice and warm because we were going full blast, you know. But I'll tell you, it was cold in the morning, but it was beautiful. It was hard work, but I enjoyed it very much. And I think you'll find that, I don't know how many people you've spoken to about making brick, but we all enjoyed it, and we all enjoy talking about it. For some reason, I've never worked that much in the woods. I've worked a little bit in the woods, and it doesn't seem as though that's anything that people talk about. But if you've worked in the brickyard, it seems, I've never seen anybody that didn't like it. Yeah. Even though a lot of guys worked two or three seasons, and that would be it. Like I worked two seasons, and that was it. And I can't remember, I went on the road after that. Yeah, I went on the construction after that. And then I got into the glass. I got into glass business and I got a trade, but most guys, that was it, 2 or 3 years. Some of the old timers, you'll find they spent 10 years in a brickyard, but it was good, it was all right.
Can you describe the different things you did, how you went about doing it, and what kind of tools and technology you had?
Well, first of all, in order to start in the morning, you've got to have a pit full of, mixed with clay, water, and sand. And this pit is, I wouldn't dare say exactly, but I would say probably 16 feet long by maybe 9 feet wide and about 8 feet deep. Almost like a cellar of a house, small. And you fill that with clay and water to the right mixture. And then in the morning, you start this machine up and you've got molds with 6 brick. And you've got a water tank about waist high and you have to dunk your molds, they're made out of wood. You dunk the mold so that the clay doesn't stick. Mm-hmm. And you put the mold in the machine, and you put this big lever, and you pull this lever back, and then you jump on the pedal with your left foot. It's got to be the left foot. Push the handle back, and you pull your mold out, which is the mold is 2-piece. And now you flip this board over, and you dump the brick onto a... There's a difference. There's making brick in the yard, which I've never made brick in the yard. If they made brick in the yard, they had a wheelbarrow, and they would put these molds, they would have individual molds, which they, I don't know how many they put on the wheelbarrow. I think it was approximately 8 or 10. Mm-hmm. They put these on the wheelbarrow, special made wheelbarrow, 2 tiers, and they would run out into a field that was all clay, a clay bed, raked very smooth, like the table here. And they would dump these brick onto the ground, which had been sanded. The ground had been sanded, which is hot clay, not ground, clay. And there was they would spread a slight layer of sand on the yard so that the brick wouldn't stick. And they'd dump all these bricks on the ground in a nice even row, and they were to dry for, depending on the weather, that's where they would dry enough to handle them and pick them up again after they were, you know, just sitting. And they would stack them up to dry some more before they put them in the kiln to bake, to cook or bake, whichever you want to call it. And that was the way they made bricks way years ago. But the brickyard that I went to work for was Morin's over here in Danville, which is about 7 or 8 miles from here. And they modernized a little bit. We had conveyor belts over there, so that we didn't have to haul the brick away from the machine onto a field by hand. What we did on these newer machines with the conveyors, we just made the brick, took the mold from the machine, turned around and dumped it on the cables. And then we'd make another quarter turn, we'd dump the mold into the sink, like a wooden sink there that we had. And back into the machine, fill that up again, turn around again, and dump her on. This went on and on and on like this. And the mud has to be, we call it mud clay. It has to be mixed, the mixture has to be right. So once in a while we have to holler at the guy in the pit, you know, you're getting hard or you're getting soft over there or something, and he has a little bit of water or whatever. And of course we made a lot more brick that way because we didn't waste time, you know, running back and forth with a wheelbarrow, which right. is what the guys in the older days used to do. And I worked with Rachel's husband a couple of days after school, I think it was, or on a weekend, on the yard. He had made brick on the yard. I don't think Javi never made brick on the cables. He made it in the yard. And that was wicked hard work. Of course, we made doubles. We doubled on our brick, our number of bricks we made. I can't remember how many thousands we made. 20, maybe 20,000, I don't remember. Mm-hmm. But and it was the same story. We had to have bathing suits. Yeah. Sometimes we'd wear one of these sweatshirts, and then it would get, say, as you flipped your mold to dump it, which was a two-piece mold, and you'd have a board on the bottom. It was board, and you slide the board. So water was splashing continuously. So no matter what you wore, how cold it was and windy, you'd get soaked. And pretty soon this would weigh about more than you wanted to carry around all day. So this would come off eventually too. It's, you know, if they'd have had something that we looked into, quite a few things that never worked.
Yeah.
Maybe now what they have, you know, they probably have something now that would work. But it wouldn't pay any more to make, you can't make water struck brick anymore, but you'll never get that beautiful pattern either. I don't know how familiar you are with water struck brick. Has a pattern that has 7 or 8 colors to it. And the only brick that has that is water struck brick. And it's quite a process in how it's stacked when it's cooked, how the brick is placed together to get that beautiful round rainbow type effect. And it's a combination of heat and evaporation and moisture that causes all these beautiful rings to be on that water struck brick. So when you look at brick, it may look like water struck, But if it hasn't got that nice rainbow effect ring, it's not water struck. And, you know, this wire cut, of course that isn't the same, it's not the same at all, it's not the same texture. I lost my train of thought now.
That's okay. Well, let me ask you this. Before we started, you were mentioning some college kids who started. Can you tell that story? Because I think it's...
The what?
The college kids who worked in the brickyard. I thought that was kind of interesting, just in terms of what it took to do.
Well, what they had is... Some of these kids were looking for tough work because they knew they were going to go to college this fall, okay? So they want to get tough for the football season. So they'd come talking to, they'd come looking for work because they heard through the grapevine that these brickyards were kind of rugged work. You had to be pretty tough for that, you know? So they'd come, and some of these kids were, you know, nice big husky couple hundred pounders, you know, and rugged as heck. And usually by the time they'd get to us, we had broken ourselves in. Now we had hardened ourselves up in a period of maybe a week or two. You know, we start off with maybe a quarter of what we're going to do once we're broken in. We have to start off slow, because if you start off trying to make a full day's quota, you're going to burn out. You burn out you're not going to last the summer. You'll probably last a couple of weeks. You won't even last a couple of weeks because your muscles won't take it. So you've got to harden yourself up, and it takes about a week. It's a good idea to go a week and a half. And then you can let go. Well, these guys didn't know that we were hardened up, so they come and... This is what they were looking for. Something that would harden them up, but there's no way they could do... They wouldn't believe it. They'd be wiped right out. 3 or 4 hours, they were wiped out. They couldn't walk home hardly. That gave us such a good feeling. They were tough, but so many of them got wiped out. And they would ask for the toughest jobs that the brickyard had. They didn't want easy jobs. They wanted something that was going to harden them up for this fall. They didn't want to lay around all summer, but some of them went home, and I'm sure for 2 weeks they couldn't move. It was good. We had one kid, he watched the operation, and in the pit, it's pretty rugged work. I mean, you've got to have a good back and good arms, because you got to shovel that wet clay, and I'm talking about, you know, 150, 200 pounds per shovelful now. This is almost inhuman. And, of course, I couldn't handle that much, so I used to have to shovel faster. But we used to have two guys on the crew that would do that, 150 pounds, 200 pounds per shovelful. We had one of these big aluminum shovels. They shovel coal. They use it for coal shovel. That's what we used to use. And I'm telling you, half the size of a refrigerator down the machine. Of course, you hit the two guys in front are always trying to run the machine dry. You know, so we can say, come on in back, let's holler at him. So it's a race. How fast are we going to get? Empty the pit is really what we're trying to do. Is empty the pit every day. It has to be empty. You can't leave anything in the pit. So the quicker we get this done, it's so much a car, which a car is a rack. And I can't remember right now how many hundreds in a rack, but once that pit is empty, we used to have a guy that ran a rototiller, big rototiller, about 8 foot wide, and he would skim the top of the field, which was all blue clay, and he would pulverize that and let it dry. You know, while we were making the brick, he was getting the field ready. And then he'd have like a scoop. He'd scoop a couple of inches of that dry clay and dump it in front of our machine, which the top of the pit was, you know, even with the ground. So he'd drive by with the tractor up here and we'd shovel that in with certain, with sand and water to, and.
So you, were you in a building or you were outside?
No, outside.
You were right outside near the
there
pit.
There was a roof. There was a roof over our head, but just a roof. No walls, no. Yeah. That's right outside. So when it was kind of chilly, that was the worst part of it. Getting going in the morning for about 10 minutes and you know,
cold.
But yeah, it was cold in the mornings. In the spring and then in the fall, naturally, same story, because the owner wanted as much brick as he could get out of us for the season. And, you know, in the fall, the brick is not drying enough in the field so that they can get that dry clay so that we can shovel it in. Mm-hmm. And now it has to absorb and mix good with the sand so it'll be ready for it in the morning. So as long as he could keep us out there and the weather permitting, we'd be striking till there was ice again on the puddles again. So we'd start with ice I've seen ice in the spring and ice in the fall on the ground, you know, when we'd quit. But like I said, it was fun. And
now, did you stop and eat lunch during
the day?
Yeah, we
had a short break. Somewhere around 9 o'clock, we'd break off maybe 15 minutes, and depending on the weather. If it was cold and windy, it was maybe 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Of course, we had other guys working on our, you know, it's a three-man team. But since this was cables, we needed somebody to put a new pallet there every time we dumped our bricks. And so one guy would dump the pallets. So one guy would have to bring the pallets with a forklift ready for this guy. And then we needed a man with some sand over there. They would throw sand on every pallet so that when we dropped the brick on there, it wouldn't stick. So it was then needed two guys down the other end of the conveyor to take the pallets off and put them on racks. And there's eight, 9-man crew. Plus, counting the forklift, that was 9-man crew there. So.
Yeah. And so the bricks were still burned on the kiln. The kilns were built. They built kilns.
Yes, I've never worked on kilns.
But you never worked on those, no.
Huh?
You never worked on
no.
the kilns.
No.
Yeah.
That's quite a process. It's very. A lot of people don't look at it as. It's quite a science. Yeah. I mean, everything has to be done right, or you don't get that beautiful design in that brick, and you can. There's more to it than I even want to get into it because I don't have the experience, but I do know that I've watched them. And the precaution that they take in building these things is unreal. And if you would speak to someone that has built these kilns from the start, it's, I think they build those things about 18 feet high, maybe 16, 18 feet high, a couple of hundred feet long. It's enormous, an enormous pile of bricks here. And they have a roof, metal roof, of course. Now that's a process and a half.
Yeah.
Making the brick isn't quite, there isn't that much to making the brick itself. But after it's dried up, and when they stack them up to build the kiln, how they place all the brick is where the pretty part of brick making comes in, but again, very, very laborious and hard labor, you know, it was all of it was hard labor.
Now, do you recall the owners that you worked for? Who were they and what were they like?
They were Fred Morin was my boss, and he was a gentle old man. Yeah. And a very, very nice person. I liked him. And the other Morin, he took care of the yard down the other end. That one was, I can't remember what that one was. But my boss was Fred. And everybody, he treated everybody very, very straight. He was good. He just wanted all the brick that he could get out of us, and which is, you know, that's what we were there for. We were there to make money.
Yeah.
So, the more brick he wanted, except when it got so cold in the fall, that, I mean, it was almost done. It used to get to a point where we wanted to quit, but then we were, you know, there's next spring. We're going to need a job next spring, too, so.
Yeah.
You know, we agreed that we're going to start this spring, and it's important that once you make a commitment, there's two other guys here. It's a three-man team.
Right.
You've got to make sure that the three of you can get along all summer, working that hard, and so you don't feel so good one day. That doesn't cut it. You get in there, and you pull the bricks out because these other two guys want their pay. Just because you don't feel good one day, it doesn't mean you're going to stay home and take it easy. Because there is nobody by now that's broken in that's going to take over what I'm doing all day long.
Right.
The other guys that are striking, they've got their three-man crews, and they got their three-man crews.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, you're short a guy. You can't find a guy to step in and pull up 40 cars. So.
Right.
I've seen sometimes guys would come in, especially when there'd be a wedding on the weekend or something, they come in Monday.
Yeah.
I've seen that often. But it got done. It was, it's too bad that it couldn't be done, the way I look at it, it could be done on a small scale. Get that old brick back. There are a lot of steps to that. Like, for instance, all the wood that it used to take to burn this stuff for days and days. I can't remember if it was 3 or 4 weeks steady, day and night. They'd have pumped slabs into there. Now, we had a lot of sawmills around. There's sawmills everywhere, and there were slabs everywhere. So, now, there are no more sawmill. Where would you get the wood to burn all this time? You wouldn't have the wood in the first place. So that's one of the things that it's. There are plenty. I'm sure there are plenty of old machines laying around that could be put to use, and you could still pull out some bricks. In fact, Harvey wants to do it.
He does.
Yeah, I think he's got a machine that's been given to him, and it could be done. Get a big electric motor on it, and it would just mean mixing a small batch of clay and water, and it could be set up in here. Of course, you couldn't cook it. Well, I guess you could if you had a big baker's oven or something.
Yeah.
That might work. But
Oh, that's a neat idea. Were there quite a few people who started for 2 or 3 days and then just left? Did you have, was that a part of the job that you saw people come and go?
They were. And they would watch the new team, okay? There were four machines over there. So there was, most of the time there was one machine that there would always be three new guys, or possibly, you know, one new guy and two old hands, or they'd be breaking in a new crew. Well, some guys, all they'd be interested in is a couple of weeks' wages and to go out body. Now, that would leave the other two guys quite not in a very good mood, right? Now they've lost a partner. Now you've lost a couple, maybe 2 or 3 weeks. Now you should be cranking them bricks out, and you're going because the weather's nice now, and this is only a seasonal job.
Mm-hmm.
So now you got to train another guy. Well, like I said, it's important that three guys get along and they have an understanding that it doesn't matter whether you feel like you don't want to work or not, you're going to be there in the morning from spring to the end of the season. But on that fourth machine. This is, I started out, I had a very good, we all wanted to make it, you know, so we'd have a good team. But I can't remember exactly what happened the first year, and we had one guy that was kind of slacking off. So what we would do is we would help some of these other guys finish over their quota, which gave us experience and speed. And so I finished the year on my first year. We didn't exactly make a killing over there, but I got the experience and I could handle it. So I found that there was an opening on machine number two. So I spoke to the guys. I had gone to school with both of them, in fact, Burabee and Jagir. And I told him, I says, I'd like to, you know, jump in with you guys if you haven't got anybody for next spring. Well, they're not sure of themselves. They want a guy that's fast, and they want a guy that's they can depend on. And they don't dare say no, because they know now that I'm broken in. I know what I'm doing. So next spring is just a matter of, do I want to jump in there and stick the season out with them? And I'm not going to be out every Monday and crying about this and crying about that, or bad back. I've seen a lot of them. The back went, they just ran out of steam. And they'd make excuses. Well, what can you do? A lot of guys liked it, but they just didn't have the steam. So I went in with Fuzzy and Henry the second year, and I got kingpin that year. I made more brick than anybody.
Oh, wow.
All four machines. That was pretty good, because sometimes somebody would be out or they couldn't finish the day or something. I'd go and help them finish their day. So a few hundred brick here and a few hundred there, and you know, at the end of the year, I didn't know it, and the timekeeper says, well, Vic, he says, you're the kingpin this year. He says, we tallied up all the bricks made by every single man, and he said, you got it this year. No trophy, of course, but...
No. Well, that's great. Mm-hmm. I bet that was a lot of bricks. You probably don't know the number.
Oh, no, I don't know. I don't even remember how many we used to make a day. All I remember it was 40 cars, 48 cars when we were hot, and we bank the pit. What we call bank the pit is we pile up clay on the edges of the pit so that we could fill it up an extra foot or so. And
so that way you could make a few more bricks, few hundred more bricks that day?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I can't remember how many hundreds it was. But that's what we call banking the pit up. And if it rained, if we were lucky enough to get the clay off the field and fill up the pit, you know, that's so. While on the open yard, any kind of bad weather, they were out of work. They lost. Let's say they'd work all morning, and if it rained bad in the afternoon, if it had a downpour in the afternoon, they lost all the brick that they had laid on the yard over here. I think it was 5,000 or 10,000, I can't remember. They'd have to pick all that brick up again. The brick was soft. I mean, you can't even pick it up.
Right.
That's how soft it is.
Right.
So you put it on the yard and you let it, you know, you leave it there in the sun and a little sand on it, and it hands up a little bit, and then there's what they call a hicking machine. It's a rig that takes them and it lays them up like this, so that flat to standing. It's a little rig that they take, and it's got all kinds of little pallets here, and and you go to the next pile, and so it dries both. Now the sides are dry, and then they whirl them off and stack them. But if they had a downpour, or if it rained all afternoon after they laid their brick out on the field, and during the night, and the next day they'd have to pick all that up because that field had to be kept clean for the, you know, the next day's work. So they bring the brick here, lay it down here, and I think they had two, one for drying, and then they use another part of the field.
Well, what did they do with all the bricks that got ruined? What did they, did you just have a big
pit,
pile?
Back in the pit, I guess. Oh. No, I guess they were, I don't know what they did with those bricks.
Yeah.
That's the same with bricks after they've been cooked and everything. These brickyards had mountains of brick that were either broken or are not perfect, not good enough to sell, because then they found out that they could put them in a chipper and crush them and make that stuff for the lawns and the around the bushes and stuff.
Right.
Like mulch.
Yeah.
So now these brickyards had mountains of these bad bricks. So they get those machines and they crunch them. What was junk. We've been laying there in piles for years, and they sold them as, not mulch, but...
I know what you're saying. I can't think of the word.
It's red. They got a name. It's crushed brick. Anyway.
Yeah.
And then they had the white stones, or they had mulch, or for around the butchers. It's...
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, that's a good way to reuse. That,
because those bricks would have would still be there.
Yeah.
And it's like sawdust now. You don't see any more sawdust piles. There used to be sawdust piles half as big as this mill, all over the place. I remember a lot of them. Be out in the back 40 or something. They used to set up these sawmills all over the place. And they'd 10, 15 years, maybe 20 years, it'd be a sawmill there. They'd be mountains of sawdust. You don't see any more sawdust piles around. It's all used. Which is, you know. See, that's another thing. There were slabs all over. Because I told you before, there were sawmills all over the place, so we could get slabs.
Right.
Without hauling the stuff a ridiculous amount of miles to get to the brickyard.
Mm.
So now no more slabs, and I still say that it would pay to open up a small brickyard and make that brick, because you look at brick, and you can tell a water-struck brick by its nice little round design, almost the length of the brick,
mm-hmm.
and you've got seven or eight different colors in that brick. That's a water-struck brick. It goes from black to brown to hues to pink, red, bluish. And you see that little ring. It's about like about the whole, almost
yeah.
the whole width of the brick, and she different colors as they go into the middle.
Huh.
You watch on buildings, you'll see.
I'll have to start looking.
That's water struck. When they're all nice and plain and all one color, that's usually wire cut. What do you call wire cut? That's all done by machine.
Yeah.
But it's still wheeled around by hand and stacked up in sheds till it dries enough to burn it.
So. Are there other people that you know that would be good to interview about brick making?
Have you interviewed Harvey?
We've interviewed Harvey, yes.
Henry Burby?
I don't know. I'll have to look on my list.
Henry would be good. Jagir passed away. Chamberlain's passed away. Flory passed away. Oh my God, they're all dead. Henry Burby, I worked with Henry, so I would say him. And I had no idea where the rest of them could have disappeared to. Of course, I moved out of the community for a long time, so
yeah.
I haven't been in contact with a lot of those people.
Well, I thought I'd ask because our list is pretty short and we're just trying to find more people who did that kind
of
work.
Well, Henry might...
It seems like
Henry, I think, spends his winters in Florida. Yeah. I don't think you'd be able to locate him. But the one to find out from would be Harvey. Harvey's got a fantastic memory. He remembers everybody.
Yeah.
If the guy made brick, Harvey knows him.
Yeah.
So you have Harvey make a list of it. You can't see. You'll have to.
Yeah.
I'll have to talk to him.
Is there anything that I haven't asked you about brick making that you think is important for us to add?
Not really.
All right, well then, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.